I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 14th of October. We were excited to watch the first Democratic presidential debate last night, and today, equally as excited to hear from you. What did you think? Our phone lines, we hope, will be jammed, and we'll take as many calls as we can during the course of the hour. 800-486-8655. Our guest this hour, Jonathan Allen, chief political correspondent at Vox, wrote probably in the wee hours of the morning, because he was up most of the night, in his article titled "Hillary Clinton Silenced Her Critics." He says this is the Hillary Clinton that Democrats have been waiting for. She won. How she connected with progressive Democrats who worry whether she shares their values and whether she can withstand Republican attacks on her policies and on her character. David Axelrod, who fashioned brilliantly Barack Obama's campaign, said Hillary was poised, passionate, and in command. James Fallows from The Atlantic tweeted last night that Hillary Rodham Clinton had the best 2 hours of the past 2 years, and that Sanders was strong, except on the gun issue. So we'd love to hear your response. Our phone number, again, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave your messages there. We love to read them. And we are on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. Jonathan is the former Washington bureau chief for Bloomberg News and Politico. He's a regular guest of All Things Political and is co-author of HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. In case you missed the event and would like just little sound bites from each of the candidates, here are each of the candidates responding to who is your biggest enemy.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said, "I ask you to judge me by the enemies I have made." You've all made a few people upset over your political careers. Which enemy are you most proud of?
I guess the coal lobby. I've worked hard for climate change, and I want to work with the coal lobby. But in my time in the Senate, I tried to bring them to the table so that we could address carbon dioxide. I'm proud to be at odds with the coal lobby.
Governor O'Malley?
The National Rifle Association.
Secretary Clinton?
Well, in addition to the NRA, the health insurance companies, the drug companies, the Iranians, probably the Republicans.
Senator Sanders?
As someone who has taken on probably every special interest that there is in Washington, I would lump Wall Street and the pharmaceutical industry at the top of my list of people who do not like me.
Senator Webb?
I'd have to say the enemy soldier that threw the grenade that wounded me, but he's not around right now to talk to.
Jonathan Allen, our guest, and we are going to talk about last night's debate. 800-486-8655. What did you think? We want to go to your calls early because this will be a chance for us all to talk about what we saw last night. Jonathan, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello. It's my pleasure to be with you.
So you were up most of the night, huh?
I was up till about 2 a.m. Eastern, and then back up at 5:30 in the morning to talk on television about it. So you've got me on short sleep. If I say anything stupid, please don't turn it into a 30-second attack.
We promise we won't, and I hope you get a nap this afternoon. That could be refreshing.
Indeed.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about what Barack Obama said early on in one of the debates that he had with Hillary Clinton. Hillary, you're likable enough. I think that what happened last night is she gave us a Hillary Clinton that was much more likable. She seemed to be having a good time. She was having fun, as you said in your article today. It was a different kind of Hillary Clinton, relaxed.
She's a very competitive person, and I think she likes competition, A, and B, I think she felt comfortable with her performance against the competition. Both of those things augured well for her having a fun night. I think, you know, being on the campaign trail, on the stump, in one-on-one interviews with reporters can be something that, like, you know, it's difficult for some candidates. She's definitely one of them to really connect with people. I think it's a lot easier for her when there's an audience and other people on the stage that she's interacting with. I think she's much more comfortable in that situation.
And you talk about her reaching out, and she did so very skillfully, to three segments that form her base: women, African Americans, and Latinos.
Yeah, I thought this was a really important thing, and I'm not sure how many people picked up on it, but as she has ceded some support over the course of this campaign, as her approval numbers have dropped even among Democrats, what you've seen is three consistent bases for her, three very strong bases for her: African-Americans, Latinos, and women. And so I thought it was interesting that she seemed to be trying to shore up those bases first and foremost. I think there was an answer where she talked about a new deal for colors, a new deal for communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was aimed at an African-American. She had just transitioned from talking about some of her criminal justice reform proposals and transitioned into talking about education and giving children opportunities, and then said that she wanted to have a new deal for communities of color. But obviously, that also refers to other minorities, Latinos, Asians, anybody that you would put in that group. In addition to that, I think there was a moment where she turned a question about immigration into a chastisement of the Republican Party for its rhetoric on immigration, which I think is at Latinos. And then with women, there were a couple of questions that Anderson Cooper asked her, one of which was how she's different from President Obama, and she immediately said, well, obviously I'm a woman, which is one difference. The other question that dealt with a political dynasty, and she said something very similar and said, I'm not running for president because I'm a woman. Here's why I'm running for president. But I thought those were both moments where she parried him very effectively. And then there was one sort of home run line, and I wish I could remember it exactly, but she basically combined several Democratic issues, the size of government, Planned Parenthood, and one other, into sort of a sweeping answer to one question that was very, very targeted to women voters. So I think, between those things, it appeared to me to be a strategic effort to make sure that she was shoring up those bases that are strongest for her. And, of course, Bernie Sanders has done a lot better among white men than among any other sort of identifiable subgroup of the American electorate.
Mm-hmm. And you said that her need, when she talked about a need for a new deal for communities of color, you said that that was perhaps her best moment of the night.
I really thought it was, in part because what we've heard so much in these last several months, in more than a year, really for generations, is that a lot of the political class isn't really paying attention to solving problems that affect communities of color and finding them at their root and restructuring in order to prevent some of the symptoms. Oftentimes the symptoms that are treated, not the root difficulties. And so I think she's got a lot to flesh out on that. This wasn't a moment where she gave you a big policy, heavy briefing book on all the proposals for that. But I do think that there was an acknowledgement of what a lot of candidates miss when they try to address some of the issues that are raised by communities of color. And so I thought it was a powerful moment for her that was not the kind of thing that you see on the morning television clips, but certainly was, I think, heard by voters who were listening for her answers on what she was going to do for communities of color.
Yeah, and particularly communities of color voters who you need to have turn out in large numbers during a general election should she be the nominee.
But I think what we're seeing from her this time around, as compared to last time, is a real focus on winning the primary first, which is, probably a good sign for her, because last time she seemed to be running for the general election first and lost the primary. But I think she is also conscious of trying to stake out ideas and themes that she thinks will be helpful to her both in the primary and going forward in the general election. And frankly, who's going to quarrel effectively in an election with the idea that that there are things that communities of color would benefit from in terms of attention from the government.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you can quarrel about size of government, you can quarrel about particular programs, but I think that the broad overarching theme that she put out there is not one that's easily attacked in the general election.
And then Bernie Sanders, who brings so much passion to the things that he believes in. He was on message forcefully again, talking about the unprecedented crisis facing the middle class. They are disappearing. Citizens United, early on he talked about Citizens United and the corrupt campaign finance system that is undermining democracy, climate change as well. He was very, very strong on that. When he went into some other areas, and he has been criticized for this, he has a strong progressive base, but when he was challenged on his gun votes, I don't think he was particularly effective.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's an area where he differs from the majority of the Democratic base. I don't think it's an issue that will be, you know, definitive for him in terms of winning or losing the primary. But it did steal a little thunder from him, I thought, during the debate. I think it was probably his worst moment was talking about guns. But he had a lot of very shining moments in that debate. He's obviously talking about issues and talking about issues in a way that Democrats want to hear about. I think, you know, I was out on the campaign trail with him last month in Iowa for a little while, and what I heard from a lot of voters, even some who plan to vote for Hillary Clinton, is that what he's saying really appeals to them.
And that issue of the declining middle class, the effects of Citizens United, would you rank it way up there, Jonathan, as one of the top three issues of concern to voters this go-around?
I don't think it's... In the primary, I think it's something a lot of Democratic primary voters think about. I think it's something that people who are so motivated that they go out and vote primaries, which is a subset of even the Democratic electorate, I think it's something that they're concerned about. I do not think it's something that is going to change a lot of votes in a general election. And at any given moment, it would subside as an issue if certain national security issues came up, or the economy, which is always the top issue, is a particularly burning interest to voters.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting how many presidential campaigns have there been? Maybe you can refresh our history memories here, but how often do you have a debate about whether or not you're a capitalist or a socialist and what it means to be a democratic socialist and what are the ills of capitalism? I just find that really intriguing that it's found its way into presidential debates.
It's really amazing. And I think what it's a function of is that there's been a change in the electorate, particularly among young people, as to their acceptance of capitalism and their acceptance of socialism. And that is to say that capitalism is less popular today than it was a few years ago, and socialism is a little more popular than it was a few days ago. That said, I still think running as a socialist is politically tricky. Bernie Sanders is running as a Democrat, not as a socialist, and mm-hmm. called a Democratic socialist. But this really was a fascinating piece of debate between him and Hillary Clinton, and he was asked sort of whether he rejected capitalism, and he redefined it a little bit, to make it more about sort of what he sees as evil capitalism.
Yes.
So he rejected that. But it is fascinating that made its way into a debate.
We're going to welcome phone calls. What did you think of the debate last night? We all watched it CNN said it was going to start at 7:30, but then we had this big buildup and a lot of commercials, and it finally got rolling, about 13 or 14 minutes before 8 o'clock. Were there people who you thought maybe you didn't like very much and you liked more after you saw this? A lot of commentators are saying that Hillary Clinton really did very, very well and won the debate last night, that Bernie Sanders was very strong and probably came in second, although he has been criticized for his position on guns. Martin O'Malley, who seemed to say, well, we did all of that in Maryland, you know, when he was governor. We did this, we did this. Gun control, we did that. Climate change, we took care of that. You know, he had some interesting things to say. James Webb, who seems to be more conservative on a lot of the issues, has a really interesting life story, doesn't he? It's just very interesting. But he didn't get stellar marks today, and Lincoln Chafee didn't get very high marks at all. So what did you make of what you saw? Were you excited by what you heard? Was there somebody who broke through who you hadn't thought very much about? Do you think that, as Nate Silver suggested today, that Hillary Clinton's opponents are not in much of a position, no matter what, to topple her? She's got support from the Democratic establishment and high favorability ratings. Or is there something that people aren't seeing when you look at how many people tweeted Bernie Sanders and Googled his name last night? Is there something that that is gaining momentum still for him? Well, we'd love to hear from you. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Please leave messages on Facebook so we can read them when the show is over. It's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. Jonathan Allen is our guest, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Democratic debate, presidential debate, first one last night, and we're responding to it. This drew a lot of attention and some laughs, and we thought we would play it in case you missed it before we get to our phone calls and concerns, an issue that has dogged Hillary Clinton for a long time now.
And you are going to be testifying before Congress next week about your emails. For the last 8 months, you haven't been able to put this issue behind you. You dismissed it. You joked about it. You called it a mistake. What does that say about your ability to handle far more challenging crises as president?
Well, I've taken responsibility for it. I did say it was a mistake. What I did was allowed by the State Department, but it wasn't the best choice. And I have been as transparent as I know to be, turning over 55,000 pages of my emails, asking that they be made public. And you're right. I am going to be testifying. I've been asking to testify for some time and to do it in public, which was not originally agreed to.
But what was making big news, of course, was Bernie Sanders' response to all of this. So we'll play a little bit of that and then get everybody's response, your response to this.
Say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Me too. Me too.
You know, the middle class, Anderson. And let me say something about the media as well. I go around the country, talk to a whole lot of people. Middle class of this country is collapsing. We have 27 million people living in poverty. We have massive wealth and income inequality. Our trade policies have cost us millions of decent jobs. The American people want to know whether we're going to have a democracy or an oligarchy as a result of Citizens United. Enough of the emails. Let's talk about the real issues facing America.
So what about those damned emails, Jonathan?
Well, Hillary Clinton couldn't have hoped for more of a bailout from Senator Sanders. You know, it'd be one thing if he had stopped at saying that he didn't want to hear any more about her damn emails. But he continued on to say that nobody's asking him about it. And I thought that was particularly telling. I know when I watched that, I thought to myself, here's, you know, Bernie Sanders is a candidate who is perhaps comfortable with the idea that he may not be the Democratic nominee. If he thought that that was going to be the difference between him winning the primary and not winning the primary, probably wouldn't say what he said. But a very good moment for her, a very unifying moment for a Democratic Party, and a reassuring moment, I think, for Democrats who have worried about her email scandal.
And I thought a very good moment for Bernie Sanders. It was just, there is something that is just totally genuine about this guy.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think there are two things at work. Number one, I think it was a magnanimous moment from him. And mm-hmm. number two, as he noted, it was maybe to his political detriment, but also, he is somebody who actually cares about the issues. And so nobody is driven to distraction, I imagine, more than Bernie Sanders at picking up the newspaper and being so frustrated with what's going on in the world and seeing stories about Hillary Clinton's email day after day.
Right. Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them. Ray in Milwaukee. Hi.
I definitely want to address what you just spoke of, but my first comment is about It was not on over-the-air TV, so the average poor person in this country, like I am, who cannot afford cable, could not see this, and why that wasn't obvious to the Democrats, I'm stunned. Now I'd like to get to Bernie's comment. If I was going to vote Democratic this time around, I was definitely leaning towards Bernie. But when he gave that flippant answer and went to bat for Hillary, he proved to me my theory that the only reason he's in this race is to whip us people on the left. Hillary's emails should have been public, in the public domain from the word go, just like Scott Walker's emails should be in the public domain from word go. And if you remember, us on the left here in Wisconsin went absolutely crazy because Scott Walker never released all of his emails. There were a lot of redacted stuff. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And four people died under Hillary's watch, and we still haven't seen the emails related to that. And for that reason, the Democrats can forget my vote. I'm definitely voting Green. It's Jill Stein.
All right. Thanks, Ray, for the call. Is this an issue that many, many voters are concerned about? And I have read that Hillary is preparing very hard for this Senate, for this committee hearing, which will be public next week.
That's true. I know some of her staff is in Washington and has been since before the debate preparing for that testimony. Usually what witnesses like Clinton do before such interrogations is go through what they call murder boards, where they do practice sessions, much like a debate prep. And this time, though, it'll be very focused, I think, on Benghazi, on Libya, and on her emails. So she won't have to worry too much about immigration policy.
Let's go to Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Kathleen. I am completely smitten by Bernie. I've traveled twice to see him. I thought his comment was right on. I think it needed to be heard. According to everything we've been told about the emails, they amount to a hill of beans. There's nothing there to be seen. And Hillary has been asking that they go public for a very long time and not getting what she desired. And also to address a comment that was made, a lot of people I know who are Democrats and in the party have thrown their hat in the ring behind Hillary, but have no intention of voting for her. Their votes will go to Bernie.
Jonathan.
Well, I think that there's no question that Bernie Sanders has endeared himself to a lot of Democratic voters, not just before last night's debate, but in last night's debate. I think they agree with him on a wide range of issues. I think electability remains an issue for him in terms of whether he can win in the general election, and then the question of whether Democrats believe that he would be good at governing and moving the country in a progressive direction remains, I think, open for some voters.
Let me get your response to Nate Silver's comments today. With near unanimous support, he's writing about Hillary, from the Democratic establishment, high favorability ratings among Democrats, even as ratings have fallen among independents. A solid lead in national polls has recently stabilized, and her opponents are not in much of a position to topple her. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Look, the way that you win a Democratic primary is to amass a majority of the delegates. The majority of the delegates come from the big states and come from big cities within those big states. A good number of the rest of the delegates are superdelegates who get to choose a candidate and represent them in, without being elected by the voters. All of those things favor Hillary Clinton. She has an advantage with African Americans and Latinos, which gives her an edge in big cities and in the big states that those big cities are in. When we look at endorsements from people who will have superdelegate votes, she's crushing the competition. Bernie Sanders, I believe, has two congressmen supporting him, Raul Grijalva and Keith Ellison, who are co-chairs of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. It is hard to see what his path is to the nomination unless she were to essentially leave the field. Mm.
Thanks, Lynn, for the call. Fred, Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Hi, guys. One thing that hasn't been mentioned on the talk shows yet that I observed is I wonder how relaxed Hillary would be if Biden had been there, and how much talk time the lesser three would have got if he was there. I think that would add a tremendously different tone to the debate if Biden had been there, and maybe Hillary would have been a lot more ruffled and not as easy as she was with Bernie. That's my comment.
And no, wait, before you go, why do you think she would be ruffled by Biden, Fred?
Because I think she would really, truly view Biden more as a contender or as a threat.
I see.
Than Bernie, to be honest.
Jonathan?
Look, I think adding any dimension changes, obviously, the nature of the debate. She's been on the stage with Joe Biden in the past in the 2007 debates running up to the 2008 Iowa caucuses and New Hampshire primary. So I think she knows how to deal with Joe Biden. I think there is some question as to which angle he would come at her from. Would it be the more moderate angle that he was as a for a long time as a senator, or the more liberal angle he took as a vice president, as Barack Obama's vice president? But it certainly would change the dynamic. Right now, as we look in polling, Bernie Sanders is doing better than Joe Biden. And I think she would be cautious about trying to go, trying to get so far away from Biden as to cause problems with Sanders or vice versa, or so close to one or the other to cause problems. I think in some ways, if Biden were to run, it makes her path a little bit easier because I think ultimately this race is going to be defined by her. And it's even though Biden takes more from her than he does from Sanders, I still think there's basically some split of the anti-Hillary vote in the end.
Jim in Green Bay. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. First of all, I want to say that being a lifelong progressive Democrat, I had every intention of watching the debates last night. But being 68 years old, I have to confess I fell asleep in the chair before the debates began.
Oh, no.
The reason why I'm calling, though, is to I want to clear something up. I have read a couple of online newscasts or news reports about Bernie's characterizing himself as a democratic socialist. And some of those news reports have been rather snarkily inferring that that's a term that he coined himself, trying to maybe be a little bit of a fence straddler. In fact, the Democratic Socialist Party is, in fact, the official name of the Socialist Party here in the United States. It's been that way since 1982.
Okay. Do you like Bernie, Jim?
Well, I'm going to vote for him. I mean, I realize that he hasn't a chance. I'm going to vote for him in the primary. Obviously, I'll be voting for Hillary in the general election. But, yeah, being somebody who grew up in Milwaukee, and, of course, Milwaukee, maybe your guest doesn't know this, was the only great major American city that was run by the Socialist Party for almost 50 years.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll vote for Bernie.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thanks very much
bye-bye.
For the call. He's going to be asked that over and over, too. I'm sorry, Jonathan.
I was going to say, I watched the movie Wayne's World. I'm well aware of Milwaukee's history of socialist mayors.
It was
pointed to in that old movie with Dana Carvey and
right.
And I'm blanking. and Mike Myers.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim. Bernie's going to be asked that over and over and over, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. And I've heard him talk about what socialism means to him. And it's basically, I think, what you would expect an American socialist to embrace, which is a nation where the government takes care of all of its people and puts the populists in front of the people with the most. It's not, I don't know that I would call it pure socialism, but I think Bernie Sanders' utopia would be a little more like a Scandinavian country, as he himself points out.
By the way,
Wisconsin may not be a bad way to campaign.
Well, Wisconsin is a different kind of state right now.
Right.
Right. Let us talk a little bit about some of the other people on stage. We haven't mentioned Lincoln Chafee or James Webb or Martin O'Malley. Chafee didn't do himself any favors last night, I don't think. He seemed to be giving some answers that may just put him out of the race.
Yes, he referred to himself at one point as a granite block, and all I could think of was, I think a granite block might be doing better in this debate.
Right.
And he had a terrible moment on when he was asked about his vote to repeal the Glass-Steagall Act, which the Glass-Steagall Act had created a firewall between commercial and investment banks. It was a 1999 repeal forwarded by Bill Clinton. Chafee had voted for it and basically said it was a mistake he'd made because he'd just been appointed to the Senate and didn't know any better. It's not the best way to get off on the right foot in the debate.
Mm-hmm. Jim Webb. Interesting background, doesn't he? But he didn't come off very well in the debate. He's more conservative on many issues, but he just, in an interesting person, you know, who's got this combination of kind of being a populist, but also being strong on defense issues. I would have thought that he would have been a strong candidate some time ago, but I'm not sure I would say that now.
Yes, surely if he was running for the Democratic nomination in 1928 instead of 2016 or, you know, some other time, he might have done better, maybe in the 40s or the 50s. He certainly seems like an anachronism. He's the only Democrat that I know of running for president in any time in the recent past who would say anything supportive of the Confederate flag. But he is an interesting character. He graduated from the Naval Academy. He was a Marine, became Ronald Reagan's Navy Secretary. Later ran for Senate as a Democrat. He opposed the Iraq War, opposed the Libya invasion. I thought there was an interesting exchange between Webb and Clinton last night on the wisdom of the United States intervening in Libya in 2011 and essentially toppling Muammar Gaddafi.
And evidently, I must say, I haven't read any of his writing, but he's quite a gifted writer, I've heard.
That's right. He's, I believe, has multiple works out there, I believe, of fiction and nonfiction.
Yes.
Certainly fiction. And has, you know, defines himself as a journalist or counts that among his credits. He's a very interesting guy, a very smart guy. He's, again, a little anachronistic for the Democratic Party in a lot of ways. But I think were there no other candidate in the race who was as wary and weary of war as Webb, pardon the alliteration, then he might be doing better. But you've got Bernie Sanders, who's pretty dovish, already doing fairly well.
Right. You're doing all right here for a couple hours of sleep, Jonathan.
Well, I really appreciate it. I thought I was going to trip myself up on other
subjects. No. And Martin O'Malley, who seemed, no matter what subject came up, don't worry about it. We already did that in my state. Yep, we did guns. We did that. Comprehensive gun, climate change, we was on top of everything.
I'm from the state of Maryland, and I love the state of Maryland, but I'm not sure that America is ready to be the state of Maryland. I think, look, Governor O'Malley, for whatever reason, hasn't gotten a lot of traction. That is despite him agreeing with the Democratic base on pretty much every issue you can think of and actually having a lot of progress to show for most of those issues. I think there's, you know, certainly were he to rise up a little higher, I think he'd have some issues with the way he ran Baltimore when he was mayor there. Certainly the African-American community was not pleased with his zero tolerance attempt to crack down on crime. But he's just not a factor. And I'm not sure what it is, but whatever it is that makes a candidate the great candidate, he doesn't seem to have it right now.
No. He did make me think, though, about this. Not that I haven't thought about it a lot already, but when he talked about the people in the audience whose daughter had been killed in Aurora and that the killer had been able to buy 4,000 rounds of military ammunition, the gun was sold to somebody who was able to buy that, which seemed outrageous. You hear that and you go, oh, my gosh, how could that have happened, considering what's going on with Badger guns here in Wisconsin right now. All this may go to the Supreme Court, but it was an important moment, I thought.
Yeah, the family owing $200,000
yes.
as a result of the court fees that it had to pay.
Yeah.
And Martin O'Malley pinning that on Bernie Sanders a little bit in a vote that Congress had to make it impossible for victims to sue gun manufacturers for the misuse of their weapons.
Right.
All of that debate is actually kind of a coded debate. It's really a fight over trial law. It's really a fight over whether Republicans are going to be able to limit trial lawyers' ability to bring cases, and a fight from Democrats' perspective for the ability of trial lawyers to represent the aggrieved and get big settlements. I know that sounds like a terribly cynical way to look at it, but that's the reason that got brought up on the floor of the House and Senate for years was really sort of one of those behind the scenes battles over one interest group.
Yeah, Amber in
two interest groups, I guess, gun manufacturers and the trial lawyers.
Right, Amber, Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I am calling because I just wanted to touch on a subject that you guys had brought up earlier in the show. You both had mentioned that it was so fascinating. In America, we are actually talking about a socialist versus a capitalist, and if we were for capitalism or not, or, you know, things like that. And I think that I felt like you guys kind of glossed over that, and I feel like in this country right now, we are talking about this issue because middle-class Americans are wondering very, very seriously if, you know, all of this money, all of these huge corporations that are making billions and millions of dollars and then funneling millions of it into politics is really a system that is working for us.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, this is among, you know, normal working class Americans, we know why we're talking about this subject right now, because we really feel like our government is not actually working in the benefit of the middle class. The middle class is the backbone of this country. And without a strong middle class, the rich people can't make their billions, but also the poor people are not taken care of. And I think that Bernie Sanders is really striking that chord with, say, somebody like myself who is politically unaffiliated before this kind of election.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I think he definitely is speaking to that issue, and it's resonating among many, many, many people, Jonathan.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the question is obviously where you're going to be on the continuum of wealth distribution, and Bernie Sanders talks about wealth distribution a lot. I think he'd like to have a much more even-looking society with fewer wealthy people, with less wealth concentrated in their hands, and obviously more wealth spread among the larger number of people. The question is, how far do you go in that direction? I think he is unfairly caricatured sometimes as wanting to go completely in that direction, and I think he has a tendency to state his principles, knowing full well that it's, you know, he's not going to be able to implement a socialist agenda on day one as president of the United States, but wanting still for people who believe as he does that the system is somewhat rigged against the little guy to, you know, have greater opportunity. The question, I think, and the reason I think that capitalism continues to pull better than socialism is that I think most Americans believe that there still are ladders up, and I think most Americans believe that that you need to have the formation of capital, you need to have businesses in order to have employment, in order to have a functional society. That if you were to get rid of all the capitalist enterprises, you would suddenly find yourself with a much smaller economy.
Thanks, Amber. Let's go to George in Milwaukee. Hi, George.
Yeah, hi. I know some people look at Bernie Sanders and think that he's an unrealistic quest that he's on because, you know, the United States is never going to vote for a democratic socialist. However, I think if you look at the next thing that Sanders talks about and says, the only way that he's going to be able to win and to govern and to put into practice the ideas that he's putting forth is that if we have what he calls a political revolution in terms of getting out tens of millions of people who fail to show up to vote, and it has been shown that a lot of those people who don't vote, who often tend to be poor, would vote Democratic.
Right.
And I think that that's, you know, because if Hillary gets in, she's going to be faced with the same opposition or close to the same opposition that Obama is. The only way Sanders can win is if he has this huge turnout that really overturns the Republican control of the House and the Senate. It's at that point, and you'll see some things happening.
But, George, how much of the minority, growing minority voter base does he need to turn out? Because he doesn't seem to be resonating with that very important base in the Democratic Party.
I think he has to do very well in order to turn them out. I think the problem is that most people don't know who he is. And I think that once people start to see that he's really a person who's in their corner and is really the person more than the Clintons who's for the little person, I think that you'll start to see more and more people start turning towards him.
Thanks, George. Jonathan, what do you think?
I don't think that the issue is so much the label democratic socialism, but I think that probably matters some. I think the issue is that what Sanders is calling for is not just a political revolution, but to get, and having listened to him pretty closely for a long time now, not just a political revolution, but in terms of voting, but a political revolution in terms of people who have voted continuing to be engaged in the remaking of the American political system. And we've seen Barack Obama try to do that with his Organizing for America group that fell flat. I think most Americans, when they elect a president, want that president to do the heavy lifting for them and are not necessarily invested in being engaged in political activity, throughout the year, every year. So I think part of what he's asking for is quite a lot, not just in terms of ideology, but also in terms of actual action from people. And I think that ultimately will be problematic for him. Maybe it's not a problem for him in terms of getting elected, but certainly a problem for him in terms of trying to implement the agenda.
Talking about last night's first Democratic debate, and our guest is Jonathan Allen, chief political correspondent at Vox, former Washington Bureau Chief for Bloomberg News and Politico. He is the author, co-author of HRC, State Secrets and the Rebirth of Hillary Clinton. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page, if you can't get on the air, we've been crowded. Please leave messages there if you can, because we'd love to read them. It gives us something to think more about it when the show is over. So that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is at K Dunn Show, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Jonathan. Spike in River West. Hi.
Hi, how are you today, Kathleen?
Good. How are you, Spike?
Every day above ground's a good one for me.
Well, good.
two quick things. First of all, I want to commend you for playing pretty much all of Bernie's comment after he said enough of the damn emails. Because if you listen to or read the major media, there's no mention of that, the things that he talked about, the important issues that need to be covered. And so kudos to you for playing the entire thing. But that kind of goes, in a sense, to my next point and something that George talked about in terms of here we are in October, and we're talking about who's going to get the nomination, and some people saying with certainty it's going to be Hillary. There's no way that, but we haven't even had one primary yet.
Yeah, I know.
We've only had one debate, I think people need to jump all over Debbie Wasserman Schultz and encourage more, as we talked about the other day.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fun game. It's a fun game, but I don't think anybody should be saying with certainty right now that it's going to be Hillary or that it's going to be Bernie or Jim Webb.
Mm-hmm.
Until the American people speak, right now we're all just playing a game. And I'll give my little prediction. I think it's going to be Bernie.
Bernie, you do.
Yeah.
All right. Check in again. I mean, you can check in before 6 months from now, but check in 6 months from now. It is ludicrous when you think about it, Jonathan, how incredibly long this campaign season is. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Compare it to Canada or Great Britain or, any of the other governments like our own and populations like our own. It seems kind of absurd that we spend so much time on it, so much money on it. But obviously, there are big issues to be discussed here. I will quarrel with your last caller on one issue, I do think it's fair to say that Jim Webb will not be the Democratic nominee year or any past year. Also, I would love to weigh in whenever you want on replacing older journalists with younger content producers.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, that's...
No, it's my greatest fear in life.
Oh, I'm sure it is. How the business has changed, hasn't it? It has
correct.
Changed. Spike, thanks for the call. Philip in Milwaukee. Hi. Hello,
Philip.
Philip, I did, yeah. Philip?
Yes. I'm a proud 86-year-old Frank T. Zeidler socialist. I'm embarrassed to admit that it took me that long to become one, but I heard, if you heard the Pope at the United Nations, you heard Frank Zeidler, the Pope talked more about common good than anyone since Frank's death. I would like to suggest, well, also, in most cases, conventional wisdom is neither. But I believe when it's down between Bernie and Hillary, Bernie will finally say that he has proudly never been a member of any major corporate board, specifically Walmart. Now, Hillary, I admit she's been a great advocate for women, but she's still one of the boys. And I feel that for the first time in my voting life, I'll be able to vote for something better than the lesser of two evils.
Oh, that's interesting. Is Hillary still one of the boys, Jonathan?
That's a great line. I may steal it and write a piece about it.
There you go. Philip will be happy you did. It is a good line.
Well, it's provocative.
Right.
There's certainly a way in which you look at Hillary Clinton. You say this is somebody who is straight out of establishment central casting.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think to yourself, well, wait a second. This is somebody who's been, in a lot of ways, not at all straight out of establishment central casting. She's achieved a lot. I sort of look at her as the tip of the spear of her generation of women who, were one of the first, and certainly in terms of large numbers, the first to really break through a lot of upper professional ranks in our society. She being the closest to having gotten to the presidency, the most legitimate female Democratic or female presidential candidate in our history. You kind of look at that and say, well, it's probably not fair to say she's just one of the boys, but the point is taken about her being in a lot of ways more of an insider than Bernie Sanders.
Right. Let's go to Mike in Ladysmith. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that, the word socialist or socialism is the most hijacked political term there is in the world. If you take three countries like Germany in the 30s, the Soviet Union, and Sweden, or any of the Scandinavian countries today, they have political parties that all had socialist in their name, yet you couldn't find more wildly different ways to run countries. And I'm talking about, of course, the Nazis, which was the National Socialist Party, and there was a union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and then any of the Social Democrats that you find in Scandinavia. These are completely different ways to organize governments. They have basically no resemblance to each other in how they organize, yet they all have the term socialism in them, and it's a shame. I wish Bernie had just called himself a Whig or some other archaic political term, and not proudly carry the baggage of a term that, which, unless you're a political scientist, you really don't understand.
That's a good suggestion for him. You should pass it along. He should come up with a different kind of name, don't you think, Jonathan? He can make something up.
Well, he seems to like democratic socialism.
Yeah, so
I don't want to force him out of a self-description. He's pointed out in the past that there were great democratic socialist leaders of other countries. I was at an event he was in Iowa a couple weeks ago with the Jewish Federation out there in Waukee, Iowa, and he was talking about Israeli leaders who were democratic socialists.
Thanks so much, Mike, for the call. And finally, Marlene writes on Facebook, which if you didn't get through, go to our Facebook page. We want to read what you think. In my humble opinion, I wish both Clinton and Sanders could be presidents of the United States. They'd be a great team and get things done. In 10 seconds, what do you think, Jonathan?
No co-presidency.
Okay. Thank you so much. I hope you get a nap. Go to sleep for a while if you can.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
But your mind was still sharp, sir. Very
Thank
sharp.
You.
Yeah, Jonathan Allen, our guest. Jonathan is covering this campaign closely, and he'll be with us again. He is the chief political correspondent at Vox. And we thank K.P. Whaley for producing this great show, and to Scotty Myers for on-air production.